Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
It's Sunday night. It's time for the hottest alternative talk radio on the planet. Welcome to Beyond the Edge Radio. Two hours of fascinating guests, mind-blowing topics, and stimulating conversation. All here on your home for the best alternative talk radio. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. Nervous? Scared? Don't be afraid. The wait will be over soon. Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network. It is Sunday night. It is April the 6th, and we are live here on the Para-X Radio Network. Welcome to the show tonight. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. And with me, as always, from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How are you, sir?
I have got a fever, more cowbell.
I thought you were going to say, I have a fever because your Baltimore Orioles are playing at last. Baseball fever.
Well, you know, they played today and won, so I'm that's okay.
So did the Pirates.
Yeah, well, you know, the Pirates got a nice team.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, they do. They got at least one good player, so, you know.
Well, hey, it's a start.
Wow, one.
Yeah, McCutcheon's a good player.
It's a start.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to start with one.
And that other voice that you hear is our paranormal news correspondent, the lovely Amy Perry. Good evening, Amy. How are you, dear?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And Amy is filling in tonight for our absent color commentator, Sean the Fork Chop Forker, because he's too busy watching WrestleMania tonight. Too good to spend the evening with us here at BTE Radio.
Oh, man. You know,
he's watching those men in tights.
He's at a party, too, so, you know.
Yeah. He's fond of those men in tights.
He has friends.
Yeah, all my friends are on the internet, so I can't have to go.
Yeah, what friends? I don't have any friends. But at any rate, we're going to have a great show tonight because joining us on the program in about 25 minutes from now is our guest, Sylvia Schultz. She is a paranormal investigator and an author of both fiction and nonfiction books. And tonight we're going to be talking with her about a book that she's written called Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. She's also written a horror, I guess it's a nonfiction book, about Ghosts of the Illinois River, and we'll be talking with her about that. At the bottom of the hour, she'll be joining us, so Sylvia will be on, and we'll be talking Ghosts of Illinois tonight, Lon and Amy.
Yeah, well, we get a ghost show once in a while, and apparently she's a paranormal investigator as well, so maybe she's got some good stories for us.
I hope so. I hope it keeps me up tonight.
I was going to say, this is right up your alley, Amy. You're a fan of ghosts.
I am a fan of ghosts.
Yeah. And speaking of ghosts, we were at a paranormal ghostly conference yesterday. UFOs, Bigfoot, crazy creatures, all that fun stuff, Amy.
Crazy people Amy. Included.
Crazy people included, yes. Amy and I attended the 7th annual Butler Paranormal Conference with our good friends Brian and Terry Seach, Dave and Carrie Rupert, Fred Saluga, Tasha, what's Tasha's last name? I'm terrible with last names. Fred's daughter, Tasha, was there. John McDonald was there. Tom Long was there. A lot of people there. Stan Gordon was there. Dan Hagman was there. He was the organizer of the event from BORU, Butler Organization for Researching the Unexplained. And also Q, Center for Unexplained Events, which is Brian and Terry's group that they run. They were the co-organizers of the group. Dr. Paul Johnson was there. He spoke. William Konkoleski was there from MUFON. He was the state director of MUFON of Michigan. Who else was there, Amy?
Legend Hunters.
Legend Hunters. Well, Dave and Carrie Rupert,
yeah.
Of course. Patty Wilson.
Me.
Amy Perry was there, yes. She made an appearance late.
All right. Some of us have to work. We can't just play around.
Well, yeah, that's true. I was there. Not that that was a big deal, but I was there. And we had a good time. It was fun. Got to hear some interesting speakers. And got to meet some fans. There were some fans, actually, of BTE Radio that stopped by. And they didn't know who we were, but they did stop by.
Good times.
Good times, yes. And that reminds me, there were two ladies that spoke at the event that, how's the nicest way you can put this? They reminded me and Amy and a lot of people there of the ladies from the Saturday Night Live skit about the NPR, public radio ladies.
I love your sweaty balls.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. They were just so subdued, and they were talking about UFO and spiritualism.
Interesting.
I wanted to hit whatever they smoked before they got on there. I know that.
I fell asleep, and half the audience left.
Oh, God.
It was quiet time when they got on.
We needed that break.
Mm. It was. Come on, see what you miss. Better get.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
But it was a good time nonetheless. We had a good time, and everybody seemed to enjoy the speakers that were there. And Fred Saluga, our good friend Fred, really put on a performance. Amy, I'm sorry you missed that because it was quite entertaining.
I'm sorry, Fred.
Dave and I had some good laughs. Fred really did put on a very entertaining performance, and a very good lecture, and had the audience in some stitches, I guess would be the appropriate word. Then we all went out to eat afterwards at the King's Restaurant, and Amy and I and a couple other folks kind of sat out in the lobby and waited for a table while everybody else...
For hours.
Yeah, sat and ate. We just sat out there.
Exiled.
Yeah. So it was a fun evening. It really was. It was a good time.
You're not making this any better for Lon to ever want to join us.
But the exciting news is Lon will be joining us this coming weekend, which is April 10th through the 13th. It's a very big weekend for BTE Radio. The whole entire BTE staff, crew, whatever you want to call us, will be in attendance for Phenomicon. Thank you. I was waiting for that. Phenomicon, or also known as Phenomenology 106, is taking place in Gettysburg. It's returning to the Eisenhower Hotel April 10th through the 13th, and it's being put on by NEPI, the Northeastern Paranormal Investigators, once again. And they've got a long list of guest celebrities this year appearing. I don't want to go through the entire list, but I'll just run down some of the highlights this year that's going to be there. From Deep South Paranormal, the Bama Boys are going to be there. Our good friend Bill Bean is going to be making an appearance. John Brightman from the Bridgewater Triangle. Brian Cano and Christopher Mancuso from Scared. Joe Chin from Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International will be there. Chip Coffey, Psychic Medium. He's also appeared on A&E Psychic Kids and Paranormal State. Chris Denman will be there.
Yay!
Darkness Radio will be there. Dave Schrader, Tim Dennis, Mally Fox, our good friends from Darkness Radio.
Looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah. Jason Gowan, my good buddy Jason Gowan will be there. Rolling right along, Big Jim Jones and Reese Sadler from Maryland will be there, from your home state, Lon.
Mm-hmm.
The Ghost Cop, Stacy Jones, will be there. Rolling down through the list, George Lopez will be there.
Wait, the George Lopez?
George R. Lopez.
Not the comedian, George.
No.
Oh, all right. I was like, what?
No. The Perrin family will be there. Andrea Perrin and her father, Roger Perrin. They were the inspiration for the movie The Conjuring that was out this past summer.
Yeah.
The Pickman family, the famous Sally House out in Kansas.
Mm.
Tony and Deborah Pickman will be there.
Tim Shaw
will be there, yes. Looking through the list, Rick Savage from the Savage Family Diggers show. Have you seen that one, Lon?
Mm-mm. No, I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, he's going to be there.
Yeah, I didn't want to be rude and go, who?
Bruce Tango. Bruce Tango, who is Dave Tango's father, and he's also appearing in Ghost Hunters. He'll be there. Our good friend Chris Vickers will be there. Psychic medium Glenn White. The Zaffis family, John Zaffis, Amy Zaffis, Chris Zaffis, also who appeared on The Haunted Collector. They'll be there this year. It's a wide variety of folks going to be there at the conference this year. Plus, as I mentioned, the BTE radio crew, Sean the Fork Chop Forker, Amy Perry, Lon Strickler, and yours truly, I'll be there. And you can stop by our table and say hello to us, and then you can act like you don't know who we are, like they did on Saturday.
It's a who's who of all that's cool. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I'll be up there on Saturday. But, you know, I think we'll all be up there Saturday.
Yep, we will.
Yes.
Yep. The tickets are no longer on sale online. However, there will be tickets sold at the door. They'll be available for purchase when you arrive at the door. You can go to the website, which is phenomiconcentral.com, and the itinerary listing is there. A list of all the speakers who's going to be showing is there. The Ghouls Gala, which is what it sounds like. It's a dance where you can dress up like your favorite ghoul. And from 9 to 1 a.m. on Saturday the 12th, it's a dance with cash bar, a DJ, a photo booth. They're going to have prizes, including dinner vouchers, breakfast vouchers, gift baskets, future event passes. And it's only $10 to get tickets for the Ghouls Gala. Last year they did a zombie prom, and that was a lot of fun. Everybody dressed up like zombies, so that might be worth checking out.
Yeah, that was pretty strange. You know, I was up in my room most of the night, and the thing of coming out in my hallway and a bunch of zombies walking down the aisleway didn't really throw me that much. But
well, you don't like zombies to begin
with.
I'm serious. And those hallways are dark anyway. It just kind of freaked me out.
You're not much of a fan of zombies anyways.
No, I'm not into the zombie thing. So, you know.
How about ghouls?
Ghouls, zombies, same as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, really. What is the difference between a ghoul and a zombie?
Not much.
I guess one's more the undead. I guess more the ghostly, like the ghoul is like a, you know, a phantom or, you know. But I guess you could probably say they're the same thing.
One's more ghoulish.
One's more ghoulish, one more zombie-ish.
There you go. Yeah. That's from our expert paranormalist.
Yeah.
There's an itinerary up there on the website you can check out that has a list of who's speaking, what day, and what time. And I'll be doing a Bigfoot experience on Sunday, taking people who've bought tickets out on Sunday morning between 10 and 12 over to Caledonia State Park over in the Mishaw State Forest, taking them on a guided tour, telling Bigfoot stories, showing what to look for as far as Bigfoot sign goes. And I'm going to be doing a lecture as well on our big furry friend, the Squatch. So that's going to be fun on Sunday morning. And as I said, we're going to have a vendor's table in the big, big vending room. And we're going to have a lot of cool stuff for sale, a lot of swag. Might have some BTE stuff for sale, Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society stuff for sale, zombie stuff for sale. I know Amy's going to have some zombie babies. Some cool stuff.
Voodoo stuff.
Yeah, voodoo stuff, all kinds of cool stuff. So make sure you stop by our table and check it out. Again, the website to go to is phenomiconcentral.com. And all kinds of cool ghoul stuff there to check out.
Oh, boy. All right.
If I have syndrome.
I'll bring some Gregory bags up. Go ahead and make some up.
There you go. So come on out and meet us. Come on out and say hello to everybody this coming Wednesday, or Thursday, I should say, Thursday through Saturday, April 10th through the 13th. We'll be out in Gettysburg at the Eisenhower Hotel Conference Center, located outside of Gettysburg on Emmitsburg Road. It's just about 2 miles outside of Gettysburg, 2.5 miles south of Gettysburg. It's really easy to find. So come on out and say hi and get
yeah,
all your...
Yeah, please go see Eric on Thursday. He has to hold it down all by himself. Lonesome. Yeah.
I will be there Wednesday night, Thursday night, by myself.
Mm.
So if you see me sitting at the bar, just come over and buy me a drink and, you know, make nice.
Ah, oh, boy.
That's about all the announcements I have. Nothing else really going on this end. Oh, I do got to make one quick announcement before we turn it over to Lon. Mountain Monsters has returned. Have you seen it, Lon?
No.
The Kentucky Hellhound.
Oh, my God.
That's what I said when it came on the air.
Dang it, I forgot the DVR.
The Kentucky Hellhound.
Never heard of that one.
It's a big, ugly dog that looks like a bear.
I wonder if they're I don't know, I wonder if they're comparing it to the Beast Between the Lakes.
Could be.
I don't know.
It could be, but it was an interesting program. The guys are back. They're in rare form, and you're sure to get a good smile out of the program.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's fun to watch.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Is it really fun to watch? Really? You guys?
If you're into that kind of thing.
Hairy guys in the woods with guns? No.
Big hairy guys and that you can't understand in the woods with guns.
Oh, even better. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's all I have. That's my review of the show. Good fun.
Well, speaking about things in the woods, I picked up a pretty interesting story a couple weeks ago, and there have been a few blogs picking it up as well from me. It's a reptilian encounter at Brooks Lake, Wyoming. And, it, you know, I know this area has had some experience with, I don't know particularly reptilians, but I know there's been some odd things that have gone up over the years. But anyway, this is the letter. I'm sending this experience, and you will be the second person I have ever told about this. The first person went back there the summer after I told him about this and has never talked to me about my story or his trip back there. We slowly lost contact over time, and I think this is the reason why. In 1978, I was elk hunting west of a town called DuBois in Wyoming. I was on my way back to town for a hot meal, gas, and restock my food supplies as I was camping in the tent in the backcountry. I was on the highway going west of town coming in and found a man wearing only hunting boots, a heavy shirt, and goose down vest. In Wyoming in the middle of October, this was definitely underdressed. Daytime temps were in the high 30s at best, and the nights are single digits or lower. Well, he got out in the road and started waving his arms wildly and begging me to stop. I saw his eyes had trails of tears on his face trailing down the dirt on it. I pulled over to the side of the deserted road to see what his problem was. I thought it might have been a rattling icy spot in the highway. Little did I know this would change my life thinking and the way I hunted by myself up there forever. He ran to the side of the pickup, and I could see he was very scared about something. He grasped the pickup and begged me with tears in his eyes to take him to town. I couldn't say no to this man. I asked him if he was in a wreck or something, and he said, "No, just please get me out of here. I need to go somewhere safe." I thought odd that he would say this, and as I had my right hand on my pistol in my lap, and he said, you never know, and I said to get in. He looked around at the tree line along the roadway and again ran to the passenger side of the pickup. As he was coming around the truck, I put the pistol in a side pocket of the door, and he got inside and locked the door and made sure the window was up, again watching the tree line. "Go, please," was all he said. I started back towards town, and then noticed the scratches on his face, clothes, hands, and the whole body was shaking. After he went a couple of miles, he somewhat slowed down on rechecking the tree line and passenger rearview mirror. "You okay, buddy?" I asked. He stared at me for many seconds and just broke down crying like a little kid. "Yeah, but don't think I'm crazy, man. I just had some shit happen. I ain't going back there for nothing. I hope the guys are okay." He composed himself some and started to explain. "I'm hunting here with two buddies, and we always hunt below Brooks Lake when we come to Wyoming. Usually we get elk or deer. Never go home skunked here. Just love it. I was going along a trail, and I'd been on many times to get to a small overlook to sit a while. It was their turn to push the elk to me. I was almost there when I walked past this stand of trees close together, and on the other side was this huge lizard. It was standing easy over 6.5 feet, golden bronze collar with a vest, and short metallic-looking briefs. I could tell it was a male, I guess, and he had a black thing on its clawed hand. Its eyes were like a cat's, and it had a tail. I just stood there with my rifle in my hands, across my chest, froze kinda, like I was looking into the face of death. I just know it. I coughed a little, and its arm with the black thing came up so fast I could hardly see it. Something hit my whole body from my feet to my head, and I fell back on the ground. I don't know if I flew or fell. I just went backwards. It came slowly walking up to me, and I could hear it and could only make my eyes slightly as I came into view. It just looked down at me, and its mouth slightly open, making a low hissing sound and its forked tongue slightly coming out of its mouth. Its head turned down looking at me and did this for a few minutes. I could hear its breathing, see the nose holes working, see its chest muscles tensing and relaxing all over its body. I was just froze there looking up. I couldn't look at it directly, and I couldn't close my eyes very easy either. Its expression never changed. Only the eyes moved sometimes slow, like sometimes so fast you could hardly see them. On its sleeve of shirt, it had a kind of O with a smaller screwy offset Y and Z, I think. It finally walked away down the trail. I don't know how long I laid there. From the sun movement, it may have been a couple of hours. I could hear the forest sounds, birds, wind, trees, animals going here and there, like nothing had happened. I would will my arms or legs to move, even fingers, when I could move every muscle in my body ached, and as I would use it, like after a workout at a gym or something. I knew if I went downhill, I would come in the old creek bottom and hopefully not see him again. I did that and followed it to the canyon bottom, and then to the road in U. Thanks again. Don't make me get out. I took off my coat, I guess, and I forgot my rifle cap. I don't need them. I hope Jake and Bobby are okay. I heard something follow me when I first got up. It was really heavy sounding, and it would stop when I stopped. And once or twice, I could hear it breathing like it did, kind of raspy wheeze sound. I would start walking again. I couldn't rest. Now, he told me that which motel to let him off at, and I did. He thanked me many times, got out, and went to the office. And I never seen him again. I thought about this fantastic story and wondered if true, but could it be right? I didn't hear anything about someone having problems somewhere around town that fall. I asked about the man next year at the motel, and no one could remember him. And if anybody knew stories about the area, I didn't get specific or anything. I didn't press it. My buddy, whom I was close to and explore stuff like this at every opportunity, was very interested in the story and the location. He took off up there the next summer for a long weekend. I had to work, so I couldn't go. I didn't see him until a couple of weeks later. I asked him about it and what he found out, and he looked at me and got very serious. Dude, don't go up there. Promise me, okay? Was all he said. I could tell he meant it. I would go with this guy sometimes, and he was very analytical and professional when doing things like taping sounds of cemeteries, exploring ghost haunts and others. He never acted scared at any time. I have never hunted or been on that side of the highway since then, but I have talked to others that have seen large barefoot prints, strange flying stuff, or howls over the years since then around the Wind River Mountains, or for what it's worth. I do like to read about the unknown and sometimes explore it, but if it just feels wrong before I start, I leave it alone. He said, now when I hunt anywhere, I don't fear bears, wolves, or other people, but I'm very wary of what else may be out there and always let someone know where I'm going before I leave. So, I don't know what this guy ran into. This area, actually, you know, there was a quote from a former Dulce Base security officer who was talking about these subterranean highways in America, and he did mention this specific area. He had said that Wyoming had a road that opens directly into a subterranean freeway, and that road no longer is used, but could be reactivated if they decide to do so with minimal cost, and it's located near Brooks Lake. So I've been looking into this. I haven't found any other information besides that, but you know, I suppose it's possible that other reptilian sightings could have been around that area. But you know, then again, if somebody had seen it, reported it, or they found out somebody knew about it, that might be the reason for the road's closure subsequent to any type of closure of an underground base or some type of research facility. So, you know, that's the story. It's pretty weird. But I do get some of these subterranean reptile stories. And as far as one, you know, above ground in the woods or somewhere out in the open, that's fairly rare.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah, it really is very interesting. And, you know, and we have been getting a lot of these, you know, for the last couple of years. You know, I've got this gentleman up in, well, he lives in Chicago now, but he was a former police officer in New Orleans. And he swears that he was actually abducted during Katrina by these reptilians, him and other people. And there have been people that have come out and verified it as well, and they were taken to some type of training facility and put under some type of military training. So I don't know what that, you know, I don't know what that is. You know, I, you know, when I get those reports, I just go ahead and report them as is. You know, I don't add anything to them or, you know, too much opinion to it. But, you know, there are a lot of reports like that, and you take it for what it is. But, you know, there's a lot of people that think these things are going on, and, you know, who's to argue with them? I've seen a lot of crazy stuff, quite honest with you. That probably wouldn't surprise me, but I don't want to run into one of them.
Have you ever had the chance to investigate, like, around here locally? Are there any reports of reptilian creatures?
You know, actually, no. This area, you know, that, you know, you're talking about, like, Maryland and Pennsylvania, you know, the mid-Atlantic. No, yeah. Not a lot. Every once in a while, you'll get something that's kind of, you know, it seems close to that. But as far as reptilian beings in and that would be an abduction case, basically. You know, you see these reptilian beings in an abduction case. But as far as the undergrounds, these deep underground facilities, most of those are out in the southwest. You know, this thing in Wyoming, that's probably the furthest north I've heard of it. But of course, you know, our friend JC and Crypto Four Corners, they've had some strange experiences down there. And Dolce Base is not really that far away from there. And of course, there's been the rumors of Dolce Base and then in the mountains around Albuquerque and some of these other places where they say that these deep undergrounds are located and that these aliens are inhabiting these deep undergrounds. So that's about it.
Neat stuff.
Yeah, you know.
The reptilians always fascinate me. They also scare the living bejesus out of me.
No, I wouldn't want to run under one. You know, David Eckhart and his abduction ordeal he had for like 10 years, and he's still having periodic visits. But you remember when Ben Hansen was on, and he pretty well believed David, you know. And I believed David from the very beginning. I mean, it was just the way David came across. Something, he was having some type of encounter, and it was continuous, and it went on for all that time. And everybody's family was having it, and I mean, it was just too many things. It was just too much, you know. It wasn't really physical evidence, but it was just a lot of anecdotal and a lot of strange type of evidence. Occurrences that kind of, you know, just weren't explainable, so.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, it reminds me of Sleestaks. I remember being terrified of them when I was little, so I don't want to see them.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That's kind of creepy. But we have come to the bottom of the hour, and we've got to make way for our guest, Sylvia Schultz, who's coming up in just a few minutes. A little bit about Sylvia, if you want to find out who she is and what she does, you can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Right on the main page, there is a bio, a photograph, and a cover of her book, Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. Sylvia is an author and a paranormal investigator. She has done some research over in the Illinois area, and she's written books on the both nonfiction and fictional aspect of horror. And she's also written a nonfiction book, Ghost of the Illinois River, in 2010. And as I said, you can find out more about her by going to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, and check that out. And she'll be joining us in just a few minutes. Her website is sylviaschultz.com, spelled sylviaschultz.com, sylviaschultz.com, or darkcontinents.com. Check out her websites during the break. And when we come back, guys, we're going to have Sylvia Schultz with us.
Very good.
You are listening to BTE Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network. Tonight, you've got Lon Strickler, Amy Perry, and Eric Altman in the house with you. And when we come back, Sylvia Schultz. Keep it right where it's at.
Kick back, relax, and crack a cold one. Beyond the Edge Radio, we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Beyond the Edge Radio.
Good evening and welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network. It's Sunday night, April the 6th, and this is Beyond the Edge Radio. I'm your host and producer of tonight's program, Eric Altman. With me, as always, Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, and our paranormal news correspondent filling in tonight for the Fork Chop, Sean Forker, the lovely and talented Amy Perry. Guys, how are you doing this evening?
Very good.
Fantastic.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. And our guest tonight is joining us. She is an author who writes fiction and nonfiction books. Her website is sylviaschultz.com. I'll spell that for you. sylviaschultz.com. And you can guess by her website name. Her name is Sylvia Schultz. We welcome her to the program. We're going to be talking tonight with her about her book, Fractured Spirits, Hauntings of the Peoria State Hospital. So welcome to the program, Sylvia. Glad you could join us this evening.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We're glad you joined us this evening on the program. And you're from the Illinois area, I understand.
I am. Born and bred. Born in Chicago and moved south about the middle of the state right now, Peoria area. And that puts me right very, very close to Bartonville, where the story is set.
Well, fantastic. Tell us a little bit about this book. What got you inspired to write about this book? I understand the hospital itself has quite a history to it, but what got you involved with writing it?
Well, it certainly does have a long and storied history. I've always loved ghost stories. Just when I was a kid, I devoured every single book on true ghost stories that the library had to offer. And when I got older, when I grew up and started writing my own stories, I was contacted by a publisher to write a book of Illinois ghost stories. He wanted me to write Ghosts of the Illinois River. And I thought, oh, how wonderful. This is right up my alley. True ghost stories, this is going to be great. So I started poking around to find stories in my area, and I kept hearing about a haunted asylum in a town called Bartonville, which just happens to be across the river from me and maybe a 10-minute car ride. So I realized this place was very, very close. So I poked around, found a couple of stories about it to put in the Ghost of the Illinois River book. And then I visited once or twice, and I just kept being drawn back to it. And so many other people have said this. Once you visit the Peoria State Hospital a couple of times, you just want to keep going back. There's something fascinating about the place. So I decided to do an entire book on the paranormal occurrences at the Peoria State Hospital. When I started doing it, when I started doing the research for the book, I was really grateful to find that the history of the asylum was just as wonderful and fascinating as all the ghost stories that have come out of it so far. When people say haunted asylum, you automatically think that the patients were abused. And I was so happy to find out that that was not the case at the Peoria State Hospital. This really was an asylum in the best sense of the word. It was a place where people found refuge, a place where people found cures and hope for the future.
Yeah, that's kind of the opposite of what you hear. You're absolutely right. Usually when you hear asylum, you hear of torture and mistreatment, and people go there, and it's a somber place. And
yeah, if you're watching a horror movie, I mean, if you want to make a horror movie 10 times more horrible, set it in an asylum.
Right. Now,
that's the way to do it.
When you started researching, was the asylum still in operation, or had it just shut down?
No, it shut down long before I even moved to the area. The Peoria State Hospital started in 1902 and was shut down by the state in 1973.
Was it difficult to get permission to enter the building to do any on-site research, or was your research just going to the library and looking up newspaper articles and talking with former employees or people that had relatives there or anything to that nature?
Well, it was quite a lot of both, actually. There were at its height, there were 65 buildings. Wow. That comprised the asylum on the hilltop. Yeah, it pretty much took up the entire hilltop in Bartonville. It was huge. 3 working farms, 4 hospitals that served not only the patients of the asylum, but also the indigents of the area for their physical needs as well as their mental health needs. 13 of those buildings are left, and 2 of those are still open. They're dedicated to paranormal investigations. That's the Bowen Building, the former administration building, and the Pollock Hospital, which was the tuberculosis ward. The rest of the 13 buildings are currently being used for other purposes. There is a country western dance bar where the gymnasium used to be. And there's one of the cottages was actually saved and turned into a dentist's office. Now, the dentist's office does not like people asking questions about the supernatural. It's a little bit of both. There are people that are very, very open about the stories they have to tell and the experiences they've had. Most people are willing to share their experiences. But I ran into a couple of pretty solid brick walls. People just did not want to do any talking about the paranormal at all. But most people were very happy to talk to me. I'm really grateful for people sharing their stories. That's what the whole book was about, is people sharing their experiences.
Was it hard to get people to open up once you told them what you were doing when you were writing the book? I'm sure they were reluctant at first when you approached them, but after you explained that you were writing a book about the subject, were they more open to talking about their experiences, or were they still very reluctant?
Well, I think everybody wants to be in a book. And people already knew me. People knew that I had the reputation of being a ghost story writer, a writer of true ghost stories because of Ghosts of the Illinois River. So people would come up to me and say, hey, what are you working on these days? And I said, hey, I am working on a book of true ghost stories about the Peoria State Hospital. And I'm so lucky to live in the area because half the people I'd say that to would say, oh, I've got a grandmother that used to work there, or I had an aunt that was committed there, and they had so many stories to share, or quite a lot of the stories that people shared with me, and I'm amazed that they did. After the asylum closed in 73, there was a lot of nighttime exploration of the buildings going on, and people had to be very, very careful and avoid the cops and keep their flashlights turned off until they were inside the building and not be too obvious about it. But I got plenty of stories from that sort of audience, too. I was very pleased that they shared those stories with me, too. So, yeah, people are eager to talk about it. I was so pleased.
Well, that's great. Sometimes I know from my experience investigating and looking into background, people are kind of reluctant to talk about their experiences until they know or they can trust you a little more. They know what you're going to take them a little more seriously than most people do. They're a little reluctant to talk about it. And my paranormal investigations aren't necessarily more paranormal ghostly investigations. Mine are more crypto related. So I can kind of understand where you're coming from. But I'm curious, though, it's kind of odd, and it doesn't really seem to fit the normalcy that we're all familiar with. I guess you'd call it normalcy when you're dealing with an asylum such as we'll use Waverly Hills as an example. Waverly Hills was a tuberculosis sanitarium, and it was known for doing some very radical treatments on some of the patients. Mm. They had thousands of people come in there, and literally hundreds of people died there. And they did some very radical treatments that weren't necessarily humane, and there were some pretty tragic endings to some folks' lives. And that place is very, very haunted, has a very big reputation, very well-known reputation of being haunted. Now, the Peoria State Hospital, as you said, was a place of refuge, and they were treated very well. So you would almost expect that place not to be haunted.
You'd think so. know, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you really would.
Eric, I'm really glad you asked that question, because when I started doing the research for this book, I realized that the hilltop in Bartonville is sort of a perfect storm of paranormal oddities. First of all, you've got tons and tons of limestone on the hilltop. There's a high school in the area called Limestone High School, and that's kind of a nod to that weird quirk of local geology. The hilltop is just littered with limestone. The Bowen Building, I mentioned the administration building, is built of blocks of limestone, not local stone, but limestone from the oldest quarry in the United States, which is in New Bedford, Indiana. You've also got the hilltop is honeycombed with natural springs as well. There are ravines that crisscross the hilltop, and sometimes at points of the year, those have running water running through them. Just a couple hundred yards away from the hilltop, you've got the longest river in the state of Illinois. You've got the Illinois River. The hilltop is just honeycombed with these natural springs. If you go down to the morgue in the Pollock Hospital and you stand in the morgue, you're actually standing on 3 feet of a natural spring. So all that running water and all that limestone really creates a good atmosphere for paranormal energy to be retained at the site. There's also the fact that Bartonville, that the hilltop in Bartonville, ages ago, was the site of an ancient Indian village. I don't know. I haven't been able to find out whether it was an actual village at the time or there was just a burial ground there. But in 1680, Fort Crèvecoeur was founded across the river, and the explorers and the captains of the fort mention in their diaries that there was a Native American presence where Bartonville now is. And investigators have even caught on tape the sounds of Native American drumming and what sounds like Native American speech. So you've got that little bit of anomaly there, too.
Because of the water and the limestone, are you thinking a lot of it might be residual hauntings?
It could be, but I have run into so many intelligent spirits there. And I'll tell you my theory why. This leads into the next thing I was about to say, was okay. That in 1973, when the state closed the asylum, they locked the doors and walked away. Everything was left in place. All of the gurneys, all of the paperwork, all of the medical what's-its laying around, it was just in place. And the cottages also, where all these patients were housed, they just locked the door and the state just walked away from it. Everything was still there. All the patients' belongings. The patients were either dead or packed off to other asylums. There were 18 geriatric patients left when the asylum closed. So they were all gone.
Okay, I was going to ask you what they did with the people that were still left there.
Yeah. There were 18 women left, elderly women, and they were packed off. A couple went to Galesburg, a couple went to Pekin, a couple went to Springfield. And there's a story of one of the patients walking all the way back from Springfield to Bartonville, which is a car ride of about an hour and a half. And she walked back to her cottage in Bartonville, and the Bartonville police found this woman sitting on the steps of her cottage, wondering why no one was letting her in. That was home
sad.
To her.
Oh,
it was.
That's a sad
yeah.
story.
It was sorry. But yeah, the milk pitchers were still sitting on the table, and plates were still sitting in the cupboards. The clothes were still in dresser drawers. Everything was just left there. Photographs and books and pianos were just left sitting where they were. The city of Bartonville tried to sell these cottages. But they were, I say cottages, and what I'm really asking you to imagine is McMansions, because they were huge. And they were far too large for single-family dwellings, mm-hmm. but they were really kind of too small for much of an industrial use. So after a while, the city couldn't unload these cottages, so they just knocked them down. They literally took the wrecking ball, knocked the cottages down, put all the rubble in the basement, and if there was any rubble left over, they picked it up in dump truck loads and dumped it into the ravine. Now, this was 40 years ago that the asylum closed. And there are still places in these ravines where you can't take two steps without stepping on broken crockery.
Oh, wow.
It's all still down there. So, I have a friend who, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if they had a cemetery there.
They do. They have, depending on how you divide them up, there are either three or five cemeteries.
Uh-huh.
I call them three. There's Cemetery 1. There's kind of an adjacent cemetery which is set aside for the use of veterans, and sometimes that's counted as a separate cemetery. There's Cemetery 2 next to the Pollock Hospital. That was for the paupers. Cemetery 1 was for the families the folks whose families had money and could afford proper headstones. Cemetery 2 was for the paupers. Those cemeteries were filled at about the same time. Then when those were filled up, they started Cemetery 3, which is the great big one, which is divided down the middle by a road called the Path to Glory. Sometimes that's counted as 3 and 4 because it's so huge and it is divided in the middle. And that reflects cemetery design of the 1920s.
Okay. You know, I was just wondering, has anybody, attributed any of the activity because around the cemeteries, or has it just been confined mostly to the buildings?
Oh, there's activity all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
The cemeteries, the buildings, the roads.
Okay.
There have been people that have reported driving down Pfeiffer Road, which is the road that leads up the hill, and they've seen figures, white figures in the road, and that actually makes perfect sense because Pfeiffer Road was put in the mid-1980s, and the two hospitals, the Levittown and the Talcott hospitals, were knocked down in order to put the road through. So you're actually driving through the basement of these former hospitals.
You know, I'm reading the history here on one of the websites, and mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like the security was that heavy there, because
patients
were able to walk around pretty well.
They were able to walk around freely, yes. Dr. Zeller, the first superintendent, was very adamant about not locking the doors. There were only two locked wards. That was the violent ward for the men, the violent ward for the women. Other than that, these cottages, these hospitals weren't locked. He said, why? These people don't lock their doors at home. Why should we lock them in now?
Yeah,
so it was self-sustaining, correct? It was a self-sustaining facility, right? Everything on-site for them. Okay.
Absolutely, yes.
We actually still have one here. We still have one here where I live, about an hour away towards Franklin. That's a lot of the cottages, and I know what you're talking about when you say cottages. They're humongous. But, it's still running, but a lot of them are kind of shut down, and it's in kind of that stage where they're talking about relocating everybody and shutting it down, which would be sad. It would be sad
to
see that go.
That's a very sad thing. Yeah. And there are some people that really need daily supervision.
Right.
And if that institution shuts down, they're not going to have that.
Right. For some of them, that's all they know is that institution. So, when you said that about the woman walking back, that's why I was like, oh, how sad, because I was thinking of some of the people. I have an uncle that's there. That's why I'm familiar with the location.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, three working farms, every one of these cottages had their own little truck garden, their own chicken coop. The patients raised their own food. They made their own clothes. They had three square meals of locally grown food a day. They had stuff to keep them occupied during the day. They had work to do that gave them a sense of purpose. Some of these people lived 50 years at the asylum. So, yes, this was home. And that, I think, is what draws a lot of the spirits back.
You know, it does seem that there were some problems, and I'm saying right after Dr. Zeller passed away.
It seemed like
there's a four-year period where they were using insulin shock therapy and performing lobotomies and skull trepanning and actually using electroshock therapy. I would have to say there has to be some paranormal effect because of those, you know. Somehow,
there could very well
be. Died, but, yeah. You know.
I don't know how many people died as a result of the electroshock therapy. I have a lot of experience with mental illness. There's a history in my family of that sort of thing. This was before the days of drug treatments. And the only thing I can say to excuse electroshock therapy or lobotomies is that it takes an awful lot to jolt a mania loose.
Uh-huh.
And these doctors were doing what they felt was good, was the appropriate course of action for each particular patient.
Right.
Now, the son of the guy who invented the lobotomy, or the guy who, not the guy who invented it, but Walter Freeman, who did a lot of lobotomies in that area of he traveled all over the country doing lobotomies. His son said, well, you know, talking about a successful lobotomy is kind of like talking about a successful car crash. It helped a couple of people, but some people it just didn't. Now, as far as the Peoria State Hospital goes, they did perform a few lobotomies. I think the number of lobotomies total was, I think it was about 25 throughout the years. Dr. Zeller and his staff were very conscious of putting women in charge. He encouraged his nurses to get all the education they could. He encouraged his nurses to go on to become doctors. The Bowen Building actually housed the finest nurses' college for decades. When a patient escaped, as he said, and when a patient would wander off and they'd make it as far as Peoria or something, Dr. Zeller would send a nurse out on the train after this patient, and she would come and collect the patient and put a hand on his shoulder and say, why don't you come on back home now? If you have a 6'4", 300-pound, raving, maniac, schizophrenic fellow with a propensity towards rape, and you lobotomize him,
right?
If you perform that procedure and you sever those nerve connections that are causing that violence, you have somebody that's that big, but has the temperament of a third grader. You have somebody that can be controlled with a kind word and a hand on the shoulder instead of being chained down, instead of being slapped into a straitjacket. That was important to those doctors. So that's the only thing I can say to explain any sort of harsh treatment that those patients got. Yeah.
Hi, Sylvia, we have a question from the chat room before it kind of gets lost, because I know we'll have a lot of them, but Erdman wants to know if you've heard about the bookbinder coming back from the grave at the Bartonville Asylum.
The story of bookbinder is one of the most famous ghost stories to come out of the Peoria State Hospital, and I will happily tell the story of bookbinder.
Okay.
Okay. I mentioned that Cemetery 2 was for the paupers, the people whose families were unknown or didn't have the money to put up a proper headstone for them. In 1906, there was a patient admitted to the Peoria State Hospital who had gone absolutely stark raving mad at work. He'd had a nervous breakdown at work, and he was sent to the Peoria State Hospital. All anybody knew about him was that he had worked in a bookbindery in either Peoria or Chicago. We're not exactly sure where. And he was rendered mute by his nervous breakdown, so he was unable to tell the intake nurses his name. So they figured out that the people who brought him there said, we worked in a bookbindery, so they wrote his name down in the intake ledger as a manual bookbinder. So he became known by the nickname Bookbinder or Old Book. Now, one of Dr. Zeller's genius ideas was to give every patient at the asylum a job to do. It gave them a reason to get up in the morning, gave them something productive to do with their time during the day, kept them out of trouble, gave them something productive to do. So Old Book was assigned to cemetery detail. He was supposed to take care of the grounds along with his co-workers, and one of his jobs was to dig the graves. So he dug the first grave for the first funeral once he had gotten, once he'd been admitted to the asylum. And he stuck around for the funeral. And he was standing there next to the grave, and the eulogy was being spoken, and a tear started tracking down Book's cheek. And he sniffled a little bit, and pretty soon Bookbinder was just openly sobbing. And he walked away from the open grave and from the service, and he walked over to this great big elm tree in the middle of Cemetery 2. And he leaned against the trunk of the elm and just started wailing and howling and carrying on. And then when the service was over, he dried his eyes and came back and helped to fill in the grave. And Bookbinder did this for every funeral that he attended. And he did attend every funeral for every grave that he dug. And he began to be sort of an urban legend around the asylum. When patients knew that they were on their deathbeds, they would grab a nurse as she was passing by and say, "Hey, make sure that Bookbinder cries for me or I'm not going to get into heaven." And Dr. Zeller actually encouraged this. There were family members that would come to funerals, and he would encourage Bookbinder to show his grief. And he said, well, whatever mania he was suffering from, it seemed to find an outlet in mourning for these other patients. Well, Bookbinder himself died after a while, and he was a popular figure around the asylum, so his funeral was very well attended. So they sang a hymn, and they gave the eulogy, and the coffin was sitting over the grave on a couple of boards with ropes underneath it. And the idea was that the guys would heave on the ropes and lift the coffin up, slide the boards out, and then lower the coffin into the grave. So these four big burly guys took a hold of the four ends of the rope, and they heaved on it, and the coffin just bounced up into the air as though it was completely empty. And at that point in time, there was a wailing and a howling heard coming from the graveyard elm. Everybody turned to look. There was the ghost of Old Book standing by the graveyard elm, leaning against the trunk of the tree, just carrying on and howling and mourning and crying. Everybody just lost. People fell to their knees. People ran away. They said, what in the world is going on? Dr. Zeller was at the funeral. He marched over to the coffin. He said, I want that coffin open right now. So they opened the coffin. They pried the nails up, and they lifted the lid of the coffin. And as soon as the coffin was open, the wailing stopped. The ghost vanished. And there was Old Book in his coffin, dead.
Wow.
Now, the story doesn't end there. Dr. Zeller wrote about this in his memoirs. He said, it was awful, but it was real. I saw it. 100 nurses and 300 spectators saw it. After a few weeks, this is high summer, after a few weeks, the graveyard elm started to die. They watered it and fertilized it. It just kept dropping leaves, and it kept continuing to die. So Dr. Zeller was a very safety-conscious guy. He didn't want a limb coming down or hurting somebody. So he said, okay, you know, I think it's time for this tree to come down. So he sent out a work crew to chop it down. The first couple of strokes of the axe, the work crew swore they could hear the voice of Old Book coming from the graveyard elm, from the trunk of the tree. And they threw their axes down. They said, oh, we don't want any part of this. So Dr. Zeller said, okay, all right. So we sent out a fire crew to burn the tree down. And they stacked kindling around the base of the tree, and they put the accelerant on, and they touched a match to it, and they swore they could see the face of Old Book coming up through the flames, and the crackling of the flames, and the smoke. They heard Old Book crying, and they threw their water buckets on the fire. They said, oh, we don't want any part of this. So the old tree was allowed to die on its own. And legend has it that when the old tree finally fell, it fell in between the rows of headstones and didn't damage a single stone when it came down. So they chopped up the trunk of the tree and they rolled the chunks of the tree, the trunk, down into the ravine that runs right next to Cemetery 2. And all of those trees now that ring that wild little plot of land are descendants of old Book's Elm.
Oh, wow. Okay, they didn't make anything with any part of the tree, though. They didn't use the wood for anything?
I had not heard that they did.
Okay.
How cool.
I know. That's why I was thinking, like, ooh, a souvenir.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Lon gets mad at me, because I want to keep weird stuff.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, just talking about weird stuff, a friend of mine was poking around in the ravine, and she found a makeup compact. And she unscrewed it, and the powder puff was still in the compact. And she lifted the powder puff, and there was still powder underneath it.
Oh, how cool.
She put some on her face before her friend said, you know, that probably belonged to one of the TB patients. Oh. Now you got TB germs all over your face. Wash your face.
I don't know if she got all grossed out, but I would have kept the compact.
Oh, yeah, she did. She did.
That's encouraging. So what are the creepy stories can you share with us, Sylvia?
Oh, creepy stories. Well, most of the stories that I've got are kind of fun little stories. Okay, you want creepy. All right.
I'm a fan of dark and spooky stuff.
Okay. Well, people keep asking me if I've ever seen a ghost, and I always used to say no. But then I thought back to an experience I had in the Pollock Hospital in the tuberculosis ward. I was there with a group called Peoria Paranormal, and I didn't know any of the people in the group. That's what's great about being a freelancer. I can just play with any group that'll let me tag along. So they had opened the group, the building up to the public for a tour to see how people did paranormal tours and everything, paranormal investigations. So I didn't know most of the people there. I knew the building volunteers, but that was about it. So I glommed onto a group, and we went down into the morgue, and there was already a group down there. We said, okay, well, you know what, let's go up to the women's ward instead. We'll leave this group to work down here, and we'll go somewhere else. So I've got this thing where I really don't like being the last person out of a dark room that I know is haunted, so I made darn sure that there was somebody behind me as I made my way, following everybody else, out of the haunted morgue and through the dark the dark storeroom and up the dark stairway. I could see her perfectly well. She had straight, long, shoulder-length blonde hair, and she was wearing this blue puffy ski jacket. There's this big metal door at the top of the basement stairs, and I stopped and I held the door for this investigator that I was absolutely certain was behind me, and there wasn't anybody there. That was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
There is a ghost that likes to hang out in the men's ward of the Pollock Hospital that they like to call Heavy Boots. Chris Morris, who is kind of in charge of the Pollock Hospital, was shutting the building down after the haunt. The Pollock Hospital is owned by the Limestone High School JFL, and every October they put on a haunted house, really smashing one, too. So Chris and Jeff were locking up after the haunt, and they're locking the back door, and they're having trouble with the key. And Chris hears heavy footsteps coming down the hall. She's like, oh, great, somebody got locked in the haunt, and now the lights are off, and he's pissed off. She's picturing some huge guy coming after her. And she goes, Jeff, give me the light. Because Jeff had the flashlight. And Jeff didn't hear her. And she said, the heavy footsteps are getting closer, and Chris is starting to panic. And she goes, Jeff, just give me the light. Jeff still didn't hear her. And the boots are getting closer, the footsteps are getting closer, and Chris yells, give me the light! And Jeff whips around with the flashlight, finally hears her. Chris grabs the flashlight and swings it into the hallway, and the footsteps stop, and there isn't anybody there. And Chris says, usually I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck go up when there's something weird around. I was absolutely caught flat-footed by this. I had no idea it was anything paranormal.
Caught him off guard.
Absolutely caught her off guard. Yeah. But like I said, some of the stories that I have to share are just really, really funny. Troy Taylor's group, American Hauntings, was at the Pollock Hospital back in November, and I was there helping investigate. And it was about 12:30 at night. Some people had gone, but there were still some people left in the building investigating. So Chris decided to do a walkthrough of the building, and she went into the men's ward, which is one of the two most haunted places in the building. She goes into the men's ward, and it's all quiet and all dark, and she hears somebody snoring. She's like, oh, great, this is making a wonderful impression. We have so little activity going on tonight that the investigators are falling asleep. That's wonderful. So she turns on the light, and she goes, hey, wake up. And there weren't any investigators in the men's ward. The men's ward was completely empty.
Hmm.
Now, do you find being a woman when you go on investigations, and I like that you said you kind of like not being really affiliated with any group, because that's kind of how I am. You get to kind of float around and watch how everybody does their own thing, and I like that too.
That's the genius part.
It is, yeah, because then you can have the fun and not all the work. But anyway.
That too.
But do you find that there are more stories that involve, like, women having things interact with them than the men that go through and investigate?
Well, that's an interesting question. I have found that it's pretty much equal. The stories I have been told come equally from men and women. I will say that women seem to be drawn more to the Peoria State Hospital. I have heard so many women tell me that, oh, wow, I can't stay away from this place. This place has such a draw for me. And I think some of that is that women are picking up on the freedom that Dr. Zeller gave his nurses and the encouragement that Dr. Zeller gave his nurses. I'm absolutely certain that that's what they're picking up on. Women were so valued and so respected while the asylum was a going concern that I think that's what people are picking up on. But as for,
Oh, no, I was going to say, and that's kind of unusual for some of the time frames of
yeah, absolutely.
Was operating too.
Absolutely it was. As far as people having experiences, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Women might be drawn because we're nurturing, you know? A lot of us, I think, you know, we're nurturing. So, and then if we think that there's sadness or loneliness or people were ill, we're caregivers. So that might be some of the draw, too.
That could very well be it. Yes, absolutely. I had a funny experience just last weekend, actually. One of the nifty things about the Pollock Hospital, of their paranormal tours, is that they do quite a lot with reenactment, with recreation. They have actors playing the parts of these patients that spent their lives at the institution. I was not playing the part of a patient. I was actually playing the part of the dietitian in the 1960s who was murdered in the kitchen, which has since been torn down. But I had a part to play, too. But it had been a long day, and I wasn't feeling very sociable. So instead of hanging out with the other actors at the front of the building, I just went back to the women's ward all by myself. I was sitting there reading a book until the tour started, until my part of the tour came up. So I'm sitting there, and I'm hearing some soft little bangs and thumps from where the football equipment is stored, because during the later part of its history, the women's ward was also used as a geriatrics ward, and I guess the old ladies don't really care for football much, so they kind of tend to throw the equipment around in their displeasure. So I'm sitting there listening to these soft little thumps and bangs off in the darkness. And I'm reading my book, and all of a sudden from the open doorway I hear, as if somebody was just as bored as I was. Or they were expecting people to come in there and be all, oh, what's going on? Let's do some investigating. Let's ask some questions. And none of that was going on. So I guess somebody was just incredibly bored with me.
You weren't entertaining enough.
I guess not. But I got a kick out of it.
Sylvia, what have been some of the comments from sensitives or intuitives that have gone through the hospital?
Well, I spoke to a sensitive who was walking through the cemetery. I think she said it was Cemetery 2. And a female spirit came up to her very distraught. And she kept saying, "I don't belong here. I don't belong here." And the sensitive felt just so sorry for her, but she couldn't really communicate with the spirit to let her know that it was okay to move on. But this poor female spirit just kept saying, I'm in the wrong place. I don't belong here. So that was distressing. I'll tell you a two-part story, too. And this also involves a sensitive during the second part of it. I was working on doing research for the book, and I was at the Bowen Building. And this was the first weekend in October a couple of years ago. The building was still closed due to asbestos removal. It's since been opened. You can go in it now. But at that point in time, there wasn't anybody allowed in the building. So the owners of the Bowen decided to do an outdoor investigation. They invited people to come to the public to come to the building. They said you can explore around the outside and you can explore the three cemeteries. And we'll just, whoever shows up, we'll divide them into four groups and we'll rotate them around. Well, 250 people showed up. So they divided all those people up into four groups and they rotated through the outside of the building and the four cemeteries. So I decided to just do my research at the Bowen and let people come to me with their stories. This was also the first weekend that the Pollock Hospital a block away were having their very first haunted house. So people were standing in line for blocks for that, too. So that little corner of Bartonville was just crawling with people. So I was standing there. I had my recorder going to catch all these people's stories, and I had my little notebook. I was taking notes. It was obvious that I was doing something involving writing, some sort of project. So at one point in the evening, I found myself alone, except for two women. One was the owner of the Bowen Building, and another was an investigator from Bloomington, about an hour away. And the lady from Bloomington was about to take off to go home. So there were three female voices, myself included, and we were saying things like, "Oh, drive safe, glad you could come out tonight, it was good to see you," blah, blah, blah. Underneath these three female voices, as I was listening to the tape later on, there's a man's voice, very distinct, very clear, saying, "There's too many people here. There's too many people here." And the thing about EVPs is that they're usually whispers, but this actually had a tone behind it. You could actually hear the tone for the first part of it. If people go to the Fractured Spirits Facebook fan page, you can actually listen to that EVP. If you want
good.
To.
You have that up so that we can go there. And that's
yes,
a Facebook
absolutely.
Page?
Yes. Mental note, I need to tell you about the Facebook page when I'm done with this story. Okay. So I was just, I'm listening. I had no idea it was on the tape. Absolutely none. So I'm listening to it afterwards. My jaw just hit the table. It was just so, and it's so very clear. It's absolutely amazing. So the next July, I was out at the Bowen Building and ran into a photographer from L.A. And I mentioned before that the asylum just has this draw for people. This woman was a photographer from L.A., had brought her son to Peoria for some sort of summer camp sort of thing. I think it was a music camp. Had dropped him off and had a couple of days to kill, so she was driving around, found herself in Bartonville, found herself looking at the Bowen saying, "Wow, what a fabulous place to take pictures of." So she's got her camera set up and everything. And she's the sensitive that I mentioned. So it was the heat of the day, and she's taking pictures, and she notices some guy in a hospital gown, and he's staring at her. He's like, "You don't belong here. Look, would you please just go away? Come on, go. Get out of here." So she was wise enough to say, "All right, okay, you know, I'll leave you alone." So she came back later on during when it was the cool of the evening, and she tried to take more pictures, and the guy was still there. He said, didn't I tell you to leave earlier? So he was still giving her grief for being there. And I could swear it was the same guy that I heard saying, "There's too many people here. There's too many people here." It just seemed like it would be the same distressed, anxious patient.
Now, you were going to mention your Facebook page.
Yes, we do
want you to do that, but and then also after you mention that, I have another question for you.
Okay, fantastic. When people read the book, Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital, when you're reading along and you come across a little cartoon ghostie in the margins of the book, that is your signal that there's extra stuff on the Facebook page. Log on to Facebook, look up Fractured Spirits. It's the first thing that comes up. There's a wonderful page there. It has extra photographs. It has videos that investigators have captured. It has EVPs that I and other investigators have captured. So the book is actually interactive. You can go and listen to the EVPs as you're reading the book.
That's really cool. I like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, yeah. And that kind of falls in line with what I wanted to ask you. What's some of your favorite evidence that you've gotten through your research there?
Oh, well, one of my absolute favorites is that there's too many people here, because that was something that I actually collected. My favorite, this is completely subjective, of course, but I was not in the morgue, but next to the morgue in the storeroom of the Pollock basement. And I was working with Peoria Paranormal again. And we were standing around using a ghost box and asking questions and getting answers, which is thrilling every single time. And it was April, so I was wearing my motorcycle jacket, and I had my recorder going in one hand, and my left hand was just sort of hanging by my side, but it was chilly in the basement. April, kind of on the chilly side. All of a sudden, I realized that the fingers of my left hand were starting to get warm. It was kind of tentative at first. And then it was really noticeable. It got to be warm enough that it felt like I was holding my fingers to a campfire. Really noticeable, really warm. And we happened to have a sensitive with us that night. And I said, "Stacy, come here on this side of the group and tell me what's going on. There's obviously something going on, but I'm about as sensitive as a dining room table. I wouldn't know. Somebody could be walking around behind me carrying their own severed head, and I wouldn't notice it. But I'm experienced this more on my hand." I'm like, "What's going on?" And she says, "Well, there's somebody holding your hand." And we asked the ghost box his name, and she said, "It's a male patient." And we said, "What's your name?" And the ghost box said, "Christopher." And she said, "Yeah, he's been holding your hand for a while." And she looked at me and she said, "Sylvia, you have a fan." And the ghost box yelped, "Yes." So we talked to Christopher for a while, and somebody behind me said, "Well, all he wants is to be in the book." And Stacy concentrated for a bit and said, "Actually, yes, that's exactly what he wants." So I said, "Well, of course I'll put you in the book." So, and if you're reading the book, and if you go onto the Fractured Spirits fan page, you can listen to that ghost box session where we meet Christopher.
Okay, so Sylvia, yeah. You keep mentioning the book, which I'm definitely going to check out. Let us know. Oh, you're welcome. But let us know where we can pick up your books, because I know you have more
Absolutely.
Than one book too.
I do, and I'm currently working on another that focuses on one of the patients of the Peoria State Hospital, a woman named Rhoda Derry. But Fractured Spirits is out now, and you can find it on Amazon. You can find it at the publisher's website, Dark ghostcontinents.com. And if you walk into any bookstore in the United States, you can ask them to order it for you, and they will happily do so.
We also have links for the website, Sylvie's website, sylviaschultz.com, and darkcontinents.com on our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, so you can go right to that page. And then click on those links or follow those links right to Sylvia's page to order the books from Amazon and see a list of all Sylvia's books that she's written. Now, we have just a few minutes before we go to break, Sylvia. I do have a quick question for you myself, because as I mentioned earlier, I'm a fan of all things dark and spooky. I want to know, has anybody had any dark or malevolent encounters with any dark spirits in the hospital?
They have. The dark entities seem to hang around the Bowen Building for some reason. How much time do we have before we go to break?
About 2 minutes.
Okay. When the asylum closed, the Bowen is this great big stone building on the hilltop. It's very visible. It's the face of the Peoria State Hospital. And unfortunately, when the vandals came by, that is the building that they focused on. They broke in, did a lot of damage in the basement, and used the basement sometimes to perform rituals that were designed to call up dark entities. So a lot of that residual energy is still in the basement of the Bowen. So, yes, people have had encounters with malevolent energies down there, and that's some part of it is not due to the asylum. That's stuff that's nonsense that happened afterwards. And there's also a very nasty entity that hangs out in the basement of the Pollock Hospital, and he was just a jerk and a bully in real life, and he's a jerk and a bully now. His name is Seth, and you don't want to tangle with him too much. He likes to hurt people.
Has he hurt anybody that's gone into the building?
Oh, yeah. I've had investigators tell me that they've gone down to the basement and all of a sudden have felt this searing pain behind their shoulder blades, and it's Seth just attacking them. And we asked him why, and he said, because I can.
Oh, an egotistical ghost. How nice.
Yeah.
Very lovely.
Yeah. And he has said some things on EVP sessions and ghost box sessions that are not appropriate to repeat on the radio.
Right. We understand. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and jump into our 9:30 break and step away for a few minutes, take care of some sponsors, and remind everybody that you're listening to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network. Our guest tonight, Sylvia Schultz. You can check out her website, sylviaschultz.com. That's spelled S-H-U-L-T-S, sylviaschultz.com. And you can also find links on her webpage to purchase her books. We were talking about her book, Fractured Spirits, The Hauntings of the Peoria State Hospital. And after the break, Sylvia, I'd like to get into a book that you've written about, Ghosts of the Illinois River, and talk about some of the spirits in that book, some of the ghost stories there as well, and continue our conversation after the break. So, folks, we invite you to keep it right where it's at. This is BT Radio Live here on the Para-X Radio Network, and we'll be back after the break. So make sure you keep it right here.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights? We'll be right back.
Welcome back to tonight's program. A little Midnight Syndicate to bring us back in from the break. And we want to say a special thank you to Midnight Syndicate, the sponsors of our bumper music here at BTE Radio. They are kind and gracious enough to allow us to use their music as our bumper music's into and out of our commercial breaks. So we want to say thank you to the guys at Midnight Syndicate for doing that. We greatly appreciate it. 9:37 here on the East Coast. This is BTE Radio live here on the Para X Radio Network. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. And I do have to apologize for a little of the sound difficulties earlier in the program. Had some patch cord issues, but I think we got everything rectified and we're back on the air and sounding a lot better than we were earlier. So thank you for your patience and tolerance there. Sylvia Schultz is our guest tonight on the program. And we were talking about the ghost of the Peoria State Hospital. Fractured Spirits was the name of the book that we were discussing before the break, and you can pick that up by going to her website, which is sylviaschultz.com, or you can go to amazon.com to pick up that book as well. Now, before we jump into her other book, Ghosts of the Illinois River, I believe, Amy, you had a question that you wanted to ask?
Yeah, I do. It's from Erdman. I want to thank you very much for asking some really great questions, and he hears that the hospital is completely shut down to tours. Have you heard that?
No, there are two buildings that are left of the 13 still standing that are devoted to tours.
Okay.
The Bowen Building and the Pollock Hospital are open for tours. If you go to the Fractured Spirits fan page on Facebook, that's where I post all of the tour information, the dates, the times, the contact people, and just that is the place to go if you want to learn about the tours that are going on at those two buildings.
See, people, she can't get any more helpful than what she is. Just go to that site.
There you go. There you go. I would encourage you, if you have the choice, to take in one of the Pollock tours, because the Pollock people really know their history, and it is so much fun to go through the building and see these reenactors recreating life at the asylum and recreating these stories. And they also go out into the cemetery. The cemetery, too, is just steps away from the Pollock's front door. So they do the bookbinder story with the actors, and it's really spectacular. And the Pollock is also, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's way more haunted than the Bowen is. The Bowen was the administration building and the nurse's dormitory for most of its history. There have been two deaths recorded in the Bowen building. The Pollock Hospital, on the other hand, was the tuberculosis ward. And even before it was built in 1950, there was a tuberculosis, like a tent cottage on the site, a tent hospital on that site. So it's people have been suffering with tuberculosis there since the very beginning, since 1902. So yes, that,
a lot of illness
that particular
there.
Site, yeah, there, that particular site, that patch of ground has seen quite a lot of death. So that there's a lot of activity at the Pollock Hospital.
I see a BTE radio field trip coming up, don't you?
Let me know. I would be thrilled to bits to be your tour for the Pollock Hospital. It would be really outstanding.
That would be fantastic.
The thing about the Pollock is, well, the entire asylum in general, all of the senses are involved. And when I say every sense is involved, I mean every single sense. People have heard footsteps. They've heard voices calling their names. They've heard bangs and thumps and howls and screams. They've seen full body apparitions. They've seen shadow people. Just people have smelled things. I talked to an investigator who was sitting in the men's death ward with her group, and they started smelling something that she said it was like pine and cinnamon mixed together. She said it smelled like Christmas.
If we smelled anything, that would be Sean, our other co-host. But
Oh, that's mean.
Now, the thing about the asylum is the Peoria State Hospital is that they were very open to different treatments. And in herbal medicine, white pine is one of the best chest decongestants there is. Watkins, the natural products company, still makes the white pine cough syrup. So I have no illusions at all that that's what they were smelling. I think they were smelling white pine. And I was there with a group. We were filming. We're Haunted History of the Paranormal. We were filming there. We were walking down the hallway, and this cameraman stopped short, and he goes, "Why am I smelling a Christmas tree?"
Oh, wow.
And all of us smelled that. People have tasted blood in their mouths. One of the symptoms of tuberculosis is lesions on the lungs. When you cough, those lesions rupture.
Wow.
And you end up coughing up blood. That's a classic symptom of TB. And people have, especially coming up from the basement, up the basement stairs, they taste blood in their mouths. And sometimes it's so strong that people have to go outside and be sick in the grass.
Yeah, I can pass on that experience.
But smelling things is so much fun. I've smelled the white pine, and there is a smell associated with Rhoda Derry, who I mentioned before. She was very fond of chewing tobacco. So if you feel a tugging on your pants leg anywhere on the asylum grounds and you smell chewing tobacco, that's Rhoda that has shown up to visit with you.
And there you go, Eric. Rhoda, you're kind of gal.
I told Rhoda's story when we were sitting in the women's ward. I was with a group. We were in the women's ward, not much going on, so I told Rhoda's story. And as we traipsed out of the women's ward to rejoin the rest of the group, every single last one of us smelled chewing tobacco. So I've experienced it myself. It's amazing.
Well, although a BTE road trip out to Illinois would be great on paper, I don't think we'd make it more than 25 miles together in the same car before we would be wanting to kill each other. So
we had to get a bus and put one in front and one in the back.
Yeah, we'd have to take separate cars.
You know you want to hear me sing the whole way.
No. Amy's choice of music would drive me absolutely nuts. So.
Wow. Couple of rousing verses of 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Oh, my God.
And they'd be telling a ghost story about me shooting myself in the head. Well, it sounds like a fascinating place, the Peoria State Hospital. And maybe one day we'll all get out there, maybe not all at the same time, but we'll all get out there to check it out. Now,
if you do, please let me know. I would love to go with you.
We definitely will. We definitely will. Now, I know we don't have much time left. We only have about 10 minutes left in the program, but I'd like to talk a little bit about, maybe you can give us a brief summary about your other book that you've written about the ghosts of the Illinois River. That sounds kind of fascinating to me. Is it about boats that have sunk on the Illinois River, or maybe pirate encampments, or tell us about that?
Sure. Well, Ghosts of the Illinois River is a collection of stories that are set along the Illinois River. It's the longest river in the state. It basically follows the river geographically north to south. A lot of the stories tend to be set in the Peoria area because that's where I live now, and I found a lot of fun stories, so I put them in the book. You guys will get a kick out of this one, since you are into cryptozoology.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stories in there deals with the Coal Hollow Monster.
Ooh.
Yeah, or Kohomo for short. In 1972, this legend really started picking up steam. In the mid-1930s or so, there was the legend of a tall, white, hairy, Bigfoot-like critter that was hanging around the Coal Hollow area in East Peoria.
Yeah, right. I've heard this story.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you're familiar with it then.
Yes.
For your audience members who might not know, there were several sightings through the years of this Bigfoot-like creature, and it became nicknamed the Coal Hollow Monster. And in the summer of 1972, things really started heating up. There was a lady who was picking blackberries and ran across the Coal Hollow Monster in the woods and just took off running, just didn't want any part of that. There were a couple that was in a VW Beetle that was driving down Coal Hollow Road, and halfway up the hill, the car died and just slowly rolled back down the hill. They were sitting there, going, oh, okay, well, what do? Do we go for help? Do we try trying to see what's wrong with the car. What do we do now? They're sitting there talking. And they became aware of this stench that was filling the area. They said, oh, it smelled like a cat that had been run over 3 days before. And I'm like, oh, man, what in the world is that? And they realized that they could hear something crashing through the woods next to them and hear this howling coming towards them. So they abandoned the car and ran to a friend's house. And the friend wasn't all that much comfort because she had had her own run-in with Kohomo a couple weeks before that. Something had stood in front of her pickup and picked up the bumper so that she couldn't, the wheels weren't touching the ground, so she couldn't get any purchase. So, yeah, there's a lot of stories around this area about the coal hollow monster. So I had to put that in the book.
Yeah, that's a neat little Bigfoot story out there, and it's fun. It's one of those fun campfire tales that people like to share.
Yeah.
So what other ghostly stories can you share with us real quick about the Illinois River?
Well, like I said, it's mostly things that are set along in the towns along the river.
Okay.
The very first one is now there was a wreck of a pleasure boat called the Columbia in 1916. There was a pleasure cruise that went a boat that went from Pekin to Peoria, July 4th. To see the fireworks and to hang out during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the Columbia was coming back and hit a snag about where Creve Coeur is now. And it hit some sort of a log, and the captain ordered the engines reversed, which just tore the hole bigger. And the boat did end up sinking and killing quite a few people. The house I live in now is in Pekin and was built in 1914. And there's a brilliant book by Ken Zersky called The Wreck of the Columbia. And he talks about people from Pekin dying and being laid out in their front parlors. And I always walk through my front parlor now going, I wonder if there was anybody from this household that had anything to do with the Columbia. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked again. So the very first story in the book was, this is something that's fascinated me. This is one of these two ghost stories that I read when I was a little kid, and it's always stuck with me. It was one of the best-known cases of spontaneous combustion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was the Roonies in, let's see, where was it? It was near the headwaters of the Illinois, so that would have been in Seneca. And Christmas Eve, the Roonies were having a little bit of whiskey with their hired man. The hired man ended up going to bed around midnight or so and woke up with a dry cough and oh, man, did I drink too much? Am I hungover? Dry mouth and everything. So he gets up and he stumbles out and he realizes that there's been a fire. And his boss, Mr. Rooney, is dead from smoke inhalation, and Mrs. Rooney is nowhere to be found. Mrs. Rooney was kind of a heavyset lady, and she had been drinking all night. And for some reason, that's one of the common themes in spontaneous combustion, is a heavyset person, and quite a lot of the time there's alcohol involved. It's some weird thing that happens within the human body. And
gotta
she,
be fat and drunk?
She's fun. Something like that, yeah. But okay. she had spontaneously combusted during the night, and that dry smoke was what the handyman woke up to Christmas morning. And, yeah, just
Merry
a
Christmas.
Weird, weird story.
And I'll keep walking on that note. I don't want to be a pile of shit.
Wow.
Well, it's not always, but it's something to do with the body fat and the alcohol. So,
that's
every single time. But
I guess I got to quit drinking now.
Put down the mad dog, Eric.
Okay. Wow. Well, Sylvia, we've got about 3 minutes left in tonight's program, and it was so much fun talking with you and hearing these different stories about the Peoria State Hospital and a couple about the Illinois River. Tell our listeners where they can get copies of your books and find out more about you, some book signings that you're going to be involved with. I know you're working on an upcoming book. Tell us a little bit about that, and just if folks want to get in hold of you, how they can do that.
Okay, the very best way to find my books and information about me is to go to Facebook and look up Fractured Spirits. It's the first thing that's going to come up. The Fractured Spirits Facebook page is updated pretty regularly, as regularly as I can manage it. My books can also be found on Amazon, and Fractured Spirits and my other fiction can be found at darkcontinents.com. The book that I am currently working on is about a patient at the Peoria State Hospital, a woman named Rhoda Derry. Her story is in the Fractured Spirits book. It's one of the great tragedies of mental health care in Illinois, and it's one of the great success stories of the Peoria State Hospital. It is a very moving story. It does have a happy ending, but oh my goodness, what this woman suffered. And she was locked up for over 40 years in an insane asylum, in an almshouse, in the worst kind of insane asylum. And her only crime was that she had fallen in love.
She was the pants grabber, right?
Yes.
And a tobacco chewer.
Yes, she was confined to a Utica crib. She, in her madness, she clawed her eyes out. She knocked out her own front teeth.
Oh.
She self-abused terribly, and she was confined to a Utica crib, and her limbs atrophied. So when she was let out, she could no longer stand. Mm. She could just crab along the floor.
Okay, now my heart's breaking right now. When is that book going to be done?
That, I'm still working on it right now. I do not have a publication date for that just yet. I expect it to come out sometime in 2015. I really want to, this is such a powerful story. I really want to do her justice. I want to do a really good job on this book. And I have been given the opportunity to explore the dining hall where Rhoda died.
Oh, good.
When the asylum started up, even at the very beginning, they had a problem with tuberculosis. And the TB wards that they had in 1902 were not quite sufficient for the patients they started getting. So the dining hall was pressed into service as a tuberculosis ward. And Rhoda came to the hospital in 1904 and passed away from TB in 1906. And during her last few weeks, she lived in what is now Dining Hall A, and that is where she died. And I will, God's willing, be able to investigate that. I'm really looking forward to that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Sylvia. It's been a real pleasure talking with you and hearing your stories and just getting to know more about the Peoria State Hospital and some of the fantastic stories that have happened there, the hauntings and the history and everything involved.
Thank you. I have had an absolute blast. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
It's been our pleasure. And please keep in touch with us and let us know when the new book comes out, and we'll try to get you back on, get you scheduled, and have you come on and tell us that horrible story and share some more
tales. You bet. That's right. I haven't really touched on Rhoda's story, so it'll be brand new to people when I come on the show next. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, you have a good rest of your Sunday night, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Fantastic.
Pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me on. Lon, Eric, Amy, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that brings us to the end of another great program here at BTE Radio, live on the Para-X Radio Network. We've got to say goodnight here in just a few minutes, but want to let everybody know we are not going to be live next week. We'll be playing a recorded show from our archives, and one of our favorite programs we'll be playing next week because we'll be at Phenomicon in Gettysburg this coming weekend. Amy, Sean, Lon, myself will be all in attendance. And unfortunately, I won't be back in time to get us on the air, so we're going to play a pre-recorded show. So no live BTE radio, but we will be back in 2 weeks, and our guest will be our good friend and cryptozoologist from the Four Corners, Crypto Four Corners area. Our good friend J.C. Johnson joins us back on the program, and he's bringing a special guest with us, I believe, If you've talked to him lately, Chief Leonard Dan from the Navajo tribe is going to be joining us too.
Yeah, Navajo Elder Chief Leonard Dan will be joining us from what I hear, so stay tuned for that.
That's going to be awesome because he's going to be talking about the shapeshifters and the furry ones and the, all kinds of strange creatures that they're seeing down there in the Navajo Nation and the Four Corners area down there in Arizona and Colorado. And man, that just gives me the creeps of some of the things they're seeing down there.
Well, Chief Dan's had some experience and some personal experience with these
the Night Stalker.
Well, yeah, that too. But he actually had a shapeshifter or a possible skinwalker come onto his property several years ago, and he has talked about that before on YouTube. But I've talked to him as well about it. So it's a pretty cool story. But he's got a lot of stories to talk about, and of course. You know, he and JC are very close, and he's JC's tracker as well when he goes out into the field. So, yeah, it'll be a very interesting show.
It should be, and looking forward to talking to JC again. And Sean should be back with us as well in 2 weeks. He's watching the WrestleMania program tonight, and unfortunately too good. He preferred Men in Tights over us. There you go. There you go. So he'll be back with us. But Amy, you did a great job tonight. Thank you for filling in and great questions and way to fill Sean's shoes. I think you did a great job.
I don't think that was very hard, but don't tell Sean I said that.
Yeah, there you go.
Love you, Sean.
I think he already knew that. But at any rate, we've got to roll out the door and make way for Revenant Reality Radio. It's up next here on the Para-X Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight, folks. Again, we will not be live next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks at 8 p.m. Eastern Start Time. Check out our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Comments, feedback, questions, guest suggestions, you can drop us a line at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Anything before we go, Amy or Lon?
Nope, just see everybody in a couple weeks.
All right.
See everybody. Play nice.
Okay, folks. And again, you have been listening to Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. Have a great night, everybody.
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para-X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Juan, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para-X Radio Network.